This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Senate advancing a proposal just moments ago that could leave more money in the pockets of families. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, one of the key architects of expanding the child tax credit, a pro-family initiative that actually originated with the Family Research Council back in the 90s, will join us in just a moment with an update. And are you ready for this? A federal judge has ordered the Office of Refugee Resettlement to allow a minor who is an illegal immigrant who is in custody of the U.S. government to get an abortion. We'll talk with Charmaine Yost, Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services, a little later here on Washington Watch. And in yet another example of liberal judicial activism, a World War I memorial in Maryland has been ordered to be torn down by a federal judge, by a federal court. Roger Byron of First Liberty Institute will join us with an update. And we'll also be taking your calls a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, tax reform has now moved to center stage in Washington, and the outcome of this debate could not be more critical for President Trump and for the Republican members of Congress. One tax reform idea that was just advanced in the Senate moments ago is a proposal to expand the child tax credit. And one of the policy leaders is Senator Mike Lee of Utah, is a member of the Judiciary Committee and chairman of the Senate Steering Committee. And he joins us now. Senator Lee, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be with you.
So you've got some good news, the Senate advancing a concept that could leave more money in the pockets of families?
Yes, that's right. If there's any single group of people whose equal opportunity to pursue happiness, we should make sure to protect. It needs to be our ultimate entrepreneurial and investor class, which is America's moms and dads. The family is the most important institution in our society. It's the fundamental unit of our society and our economy. You know, this is really an incubator of economic opportunity. It is one of the best indicators of economic success. And it's becoming more socially and economically important every single day. But unfortunately, the current tax code singles out parents of young children and unfairly double taxes them. This is what I call the parent tax penalty. It's a glitch in the federal tax code that requires parents to contribute to senior entitlement programs not once, but twice. So my idea for increasing the child tax credit is really a solution to this penalty. And we need to make that refundable against payroll tax liability. This would do a lot to alleviate burdens on America's working-class families.
So what are you proposing in terms of dollar amount?
What I think we ought to do is take it up to about $2,000 per child. That, in the context of this larger framework that we're looking at, would provide real meaningful relief. It would start to level the playing field to treat all taxpayers more fairly. For a working-class family, this would mean an immediate, potentially life-changing reform. More money in the pockets of America's moms and dads.
So when you talk about it as being refundable, now we're talking, this is a doubling. It's currently at $1,000, so we're talking about doubling up to $2,000 and being refundable. That means that how in terms of being refundable, it would be those that would not even have that liability would get that that tax?
Yes. Now, I want to be clear here. What I mean is that it would be refundable up to the amount of total taxes paid by the taxpayer and total payroll taxes withheld by the employer. So there are those families out there, those working moms and dads, who make a low enough salary that they're not actually paying federal income tax. But still, there is tax withheld on their behalf on the part of their employer and the part of payroll tax, and this would be refundable up to the level of that tax.
And that's one that's a dollar for dollar, so it's refundable. It's not a percentage. It's refundable for the taxes withheld from their payroll.
Yes, exactly. And so the point there is that this is there for those who are working. those who were actually contributing to the system.
And that could be very significant.
For nothing, but this really is money that's coming out of the bottom line of workers. And you're right, that really could be something, and it would be.
And the reason, Senator Lee, that I think we focus on this, in fact, this concept was an idea that we put forth in the 90s, and it kept going until finally it was adopted by Congress, put in place. And now we're looking to expand it to keep up with the inflation and everything else. But these are future taxpayers. These are future workers. And so we want to encourage families that are having children that are going to be the future economic drivers of our country.
That's right. We have to remember that because our senior entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, operate on a pay-as-you-go basis, today's children are tomorrow's workers, and they will be funding the Social Security and Medicare benefits of today's workers who are tomorrow's retirees. That's why when a married couple who has children, as they're incurring hundreds of thousands of dollars in child-rearing expenses, they're doing more than just investing in their own family. They're also investing in the stability of Social Security and Medicare. But our current tax code doesn't take that into account, and it should.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, my guest, talking about a provision that is, in fact, just advanced by a bipartisan vote in the Senate that would add this to tax reform, and that being a refundable tax credit against payroll taxes for families with children, about a doubling of that $1,000 tax credit. Senator, what was the was there much debate as you offered that amendment?
No, there wasn't. There was not a whole lot of concern in response to it, and it passed by voice vote. I didn't hear a single person voting against it. When we vote by voice vote, as opposed to a roll call vote, it's an informal procedure. But normally you can hear if someone is audibly expressing a dissent. I didn't hear any of that in the chamber.
So what's the next step?
Well, the next step is for us to get this budget passed. That's what we're debating right now. The budget will in turn set up the mechanism whereby we can pass a tax cut, the tax reform package, within the next few weeks. And this is an important step toward doing that today.
And important because as this gets into the budget, then when reconciliation occurs, it's very easy to make the argument it should be in there.
Yes, exactly. It should be, and I believe it will be.
What's the time frame? When can Americans potentially look to see some type of benefit from this?
Well, the next big time horizon is just when we get it passed. But I believe they could see some real benefit from this within the next few months if we get this passed within the next few weeks.
Do you think we will see tax reform by the end of the year?
I do, because I believe Republicans in the Senate and in the House of Representatives understand if we don't get this done, we're in a lot of trouble. And that's a real important motivator. There are lots of motivators in life. Fear is one of them. And we have reason to be fearful of what will happen when our constituents see us failing to do this, which is why we can't fail.
I think that's absolutely right. When you look at the Obamacare repeal and replace that didn't make it through, that was a key promise. And this is the next one in line, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the Republicans, the administration, needs to be able to deliver something of substance, not just window dressing, but some true significant tax reform. And I know they're talking about that in the House. I've spoken to several House members. Do you think it's going to be substantive?
I do. No, I think it'll be substantive, and I think it'll happen. You know, to paraphrase something that Winston Churchill said of the American people, I would say here that the United States Senate can be counted on to do the right thing after it has exhausted every other alternative. And I therefore think we'll pass something, and I think it'll be substantive. I think it will result in American families having more take-home pay, more disposable income. And I think that will also generate more economic growth, which will in turn lead to opportunities for America's middle class.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is the micro and the macro. The macro is this is going to grow the economy, but it's going to take a while for that to really see the effect of that. I mean, there'll be an initial push as more businesses choose to expand, but the true economic growth is going to be a few years down the road. But the micro in terms of the impact upon families with policies like this could be immediate.
Yes, that's right. And this is one of those policies that, if implemented, would bring about very speedy relief. It would result in the improvement of situations for American families very, very quickly.
Senator, before I let you go, and I know you guys are busy because you've got votes going on the Senate floor, but also in the news, a lot of discussion about the Senate expanding its hours to try to take on more of these nominees that have kind of been log-jammed. Can we look to see, can we expect to see more nominees from this administration being approved?
Yes, we can, and we have to. I welcome that development. I wish it had happened many months ago, but it's good that we're doing it right now. Look, the fact remains that relative to where the Obama administration was year to date in 2009, during its first year, we're at about a third of the way down the road where we should be. And relative to where the Obama administration was in its first year. A lot of the reason for that, most of the reason for that, is because the Senate's been really slow. Now, a lot of that has to do with the fact that my Democratic colleagues have used procedural hurdles to stop the wheels of progress in the Senate. But I think we have facilitated that by not making them work for it. And I think we're going to start making them work for it, and that's going to speed up the process.
Senator Lee, you and I haven't actually spoken about this in a few months. Last time we talked, we were discussing some of the nominees, and clearly because you're on the Senate Judiciary Committee, you're much closer to this than I am. But in my conversations with the White House and looking at their nominees, I think this is one of the areas where they have absolutely gotten it right with their judicial nominees. They've made some stellar picks.
Oh, they have. Look, Justice Gorsuch is an extraordinary pick. We've had some really good other judges coming through the lower courts. We had a hearing just this week for Greg Katsas, who's been appointed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He's an outstanding lawyer. I've known him and known of him for many years. And it's very fortunate that the Trump administration has gone out of its way to make sure that we're getting people like this interested in being federal judges and then in nominating them.
And hopefully we'll get them through the process quickly, because basically they put their lives on hold during this period, and that can be very frustrating for those who have been nominated.
Yeah, it can be frustrating. It can be invasive. It can put in jeopardy all kinds of things in their lives, not to mention their own sanity. That's why I salute them, but we need to do more than just salute them. We need to make sure they get confirmed.
Absolutely. Senator Mike Lee, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and thank you for advancing that child tax credit expansion. Overdue, needed, and essential.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Senator Mike Lee of Utah. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. So families may soon see a little tax relief coming if you have kids. There's still time. Go make some more kids, I guess. You get more tax money back. Anyway, we're coming back on the other side of this break. Breaking news. We'll talk about it on the other side of this break, but a court ruling putting a stay on a court order telling the Trump administration to allow a minor in the custody of the federal government to have an abortion. She's here illegally as an illegal immigrant. Anyway, breaking news. We'll come back on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, a three-judge panel, this just happened just a while ago, a three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals issued a stay on a lower court judge's decision or order yesterday that ordered officials from the Trump administration to allow a detained, undocumented teen to have an abortion. It was scheduled to be either Friday or Saturday. There will be a hearing tomorrow on this case. Joining us now to discuss this further, Charmaine Yost, Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs at the Health and Human Services, has the details. Charmaine, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So some positive developments here with this three-judge panel on the circuit, D.C. Circuit.
Well, the fact that the ACLU won their injunction last night ordering us to allow her to take her to get the abortion, but then within 24 hours we filed an emergency brief asking a stay of that decision. And so we're moving forward, as you said, to oral arguments tomorrow at 10 on the substance of it after having that procedural ping pong back and forth. So it's coming down very, very quickly. And it's a very good thing that we're getting to have this this argument about the substance of the claims on the record tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Now, as I understand the facts in the case, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a 17-year-old female who crossed the border from Mexico illegally into the country last month, and she is in federal custody, custody of our government. She's a minor, and they've now, and of course, the Trump administration officials saying, you know, we're not going to provide abortion, we're not going to accommodate that request. The judge yesterday ordering that the Trump administration must facilitate that abortion.
Right. And, you know, two things quickly. One, I want to be careful throughout our conversation, you know, not to talk about the specific girl for all the obvious reasons.
Right.
But there are some really important facts about the program that's in question here that most Americans have no reason to know anything about is what the program that we're administrating here, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, is governed by federal law. There are statutes here that are telling us what to do. And the overarching factor here is that you have a young woman, a minor child who has come across the border on her own, comes across, we discover she's pregnant. You know, we have a moral obligation to care for her. This program is designed to be compassionate. It's designed to provide shelter, food, even education for these young people. They have two options. She has the option to voluntarily go home. The HHS is able to expedite her being able to go home to her family in Guatemala. Or the alternative is these children are sometimes released to sponsors here in the United States. So those are two options that move a young person out of these shelters. But our moral obligation is to ensure that she's okay. And frankly, if you think about the idea of the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, these other groups coming along and saying, as perfect strangers to her, that she should be released to their custody for an abortion, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Now, this is not a medically necessary abortion. This is an elective abortion, correct?
Correct.
So is there a constitutional right for a pregnant minor who illegally crosses into this country to have an elective abortion while in federal custody?
The court has never ruled that, and so that's really at the heart of what they will be discussing tomorrow in front of the court. So obviously you're instantly seeing that the ramifications of this are tremendous if the court were to rule that coming across the border illegally and being in federal custody then gave you an automatic right to get an abortion would have far-reaching ramifications.
Now, not that this is the overarching issue, but would, in terms of facilitating this, would the federal government be required to pay the cost of this?
Well, see, this is a really interesting question because the ACLU has said, you know, that HHS would not have to pay for it. But again, going back to the fact that she's under HHS's care, HHS staff people, the grantees in this Texas facility would have to ensure her safety, would have to ensure, before and after the procedure, her transportation. By federal law statute, you cannot just release her unless it's to the two different scenarios that I outlined, that she either goes home or to a sponsor in the United States.
So, Charmaine, this would be making a huge exception just to accommodate abortion, where this would not be allowed for any other type of procedure to be done outside of the government's watch care.
I don't think so. I'd have to double check that precise point, but yeah, anytime there's going to be a medical issue with someone who's in the care of these federal facilities, it's the obligation of the grantee to make sure that they're okay and to be involved in that. You know, coming back to a fundamental point that I think gets lost is we're talking about minors here. We're talking about children who have come across the border on their own. They're unaccompanied minors. These are kids.
And they're in a strange country. They don't have parents with them. It is the whether we like it or not, our government is providing the supervision and the oversight, and we have the responsibility to care for them until we either, as you said, they get a sponsor or we send them home.
Well, that's it exactly. And so when you think about the fact that this is a young woman, I would think, you know, as you said, alone, I would assume she's scared. And suddenly caught up in this ideological agenda of these groups who are wanting to make a political point.
Charmaine Yost, thank you for joining us. We'll be following this very closely, watching the the hearing tomorrow morning. Thank you for joining
us. Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, Charmaine Yost with the Department of Health and Human Services, Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs. All right, folks, when we come back, in yet another court ruling by a liberal judge, a World War I memorial in the shape of the cross that has stood for nearly 100 years has been ordered to be torn down. We'll speak with one of the attorneys with First Liberty Institute next. Don't go away.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website, tonyperkins.com. Yesterday, a federal appeals court ruled that a World War I memorial in the shape of a cross is unconstitutional. The monument has marked a major intersection in Prince George's County, that's in Maryland, for 90 years. It's known as the Peace Cross. In a 2-1 ruling, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit said the 40-foot-tall memorial has the primary effect of endorsing religion and excessively entangles the government in religion. With us now is Roger Byron. He is the senior counsel for First Liberty Institute, and they are representing the American Legion in the fight to save the cross. Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tommy. Good to be here.
Let me just ask you, is this decision final?
Well, it's certainly the Fourth Circuit's decision. Whether it's the final decision in this case is yet to be seen. So, as you indicated, this order or this opinion effectively orders the removal of a veterans memorial that stood for almost 100 years. And the sole reason for that is that it uses the shape of a cross.
Now, what if it had been in the shape of some? I mean, they say it's because it's a cross. It entangles the government in religion. What if it were in the shape of a scimitar, a Middle Eastern sword? I mean, would that be unconstitutional? I mean, it just seems that we're seeing increasingly the courts going after any symbols of Christianity, even though they've been standing for decades and trying to eradicate them.
Well, we certainly see increasing attacks specifically on a cross symbol used in displays on government property. The underlying reasoning behind the Fourth Circuit's decision is essentially that. a cross shape on government property is presumptively unlawful. There's no way to escape that from reading the opinion. And that, of course, is not the law. It's not even close to the law.
Now, there was a dissent. Chief Judge Gregory wrote a separate opinion, dissenting with the other two, and he said, quote, "This memorial stands in witness to the valor, endurance, courage, and devotion of the 49 residents of Prince George's County, Maryland, who lost their lives in the Great War for the liberty of the world. I cannot agree that a monument so conceived and dedicated and that bears such witness violates the letter or spirit of the very Constitution these heroes died to defend."
Certainly, and those four words, valor, endurance, courage, and devotion, he did not make those up. Those come directly from the monument itself, which is also sitting in the middle of an area called Veterans Memorial Park and surrounded by numerous other memorials to the veterans. It's a marvelous memorial, and it is a travesty, frankly, that an order from a Court of Appeals of the United States would effectively order its removal. I mean, if this memorial has to come down, then by the logic of this opinion, it threatens veterans' memorials across the country that happen to bear religious imagery, and there are a lot of them. Whether it's maybe the Argonne Cross in Arlington Cemetery, or the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice, or perhaps even the word God on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
That's what I was going to ask you, Roger. If this decision is allowed to stand, I would think that this sets a very dangerous precedent. I mean, if you say it's these standalone crosses, as you mentioned, Arlington, but also on individual gravestones, you have religious symbols in Arlington and elsewhere. I mean, we're going to have to sandblast those off?
It's not just the gravestones. I mean, Tony, you know from your service, and I was a Navy man, but though I don't hold your service against you, sir, I thank you for it.
Thank you.
the cross symbol has been used by the U.S. military to honor exemplary service for many, many years, for much of our nation's history. Now, whether it's the Distinguished Service Cross or the Navy Cross or the Air Force Cross, which are all medals that are awarded for valor, and they come just below the Congressional Medal of Honor. The Distinguished Service Cross is also there. And what you just mentioned, the countless headstones in American cemeteries overseas. And each of those cemeteries also has a cross of sacrifice, a long-standing mm-hmm. cross there to commemorate the valor and the sacrifice of the men that fell.
And those are maintained, in most cases, by the U.S. government.
Absolutely.
Well, so,
they are American cemeteries. Those cemeteries are American soil.
Right, and they're maintained by American tax dollars. And so if this decision is allowed to stand, that precedent would eventually ripple across the country, and all of these would have to be eradicated.
Using the reasoning of today's opinion, yes, that would be the result. The hope is that the reasoning of today's opinion will not ultimately stand.
It would be tragic if it does. Roger Byron, thank you so much for joining us. And again, appreciate all the work of First Liberty in defending these important memorials.
Tom, thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to talk about this more on the other side of the break. I mean, this is disturbing. It really is. I mean, these liberal activist judges seeking to eradicate any representation, any reflection of America's Christian history. I mean, you're going to break out the jackhammers, the sandblasters. When does it stop? I think this is one of the reasons there's so much opposition to the judicial picks from President Trump. All right, we're going to talk more about this on the other side of the break. Don't go away. You're listening to Washington Watch.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Hey, folks, let me remind you, we're taking a trip to Israel this spring in April, April 17th through the 27th. If you'd like to join us, got a great crew that's going. Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author. General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, former ambassador to the UN. Ken Blackwell. It's going to be a great, great time. And you can come along with us. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over to find out more about it. Okay, this is what I'm going to talk about. I've got a couple more things to say about it, but I want to know what you think. Are these monuments with crosses, most of them veterans' monuments, are they worth fighting for? We've seen a number of cases. We saw the one down in Pensacola, court ordering that be taken down. I mean, systematically, these courts are coming to these conclusions. And, I mean, these things have been around for... Is this one, since 1925, this was built in 1925 in Prince George County in Maryland. Do you think these are worth fighting for? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Do you think that these crosses, most of them veterans memorials, are worth fighting for? Let me know what you think, 866-372-7234. Look, the anti-God crowd is working overtime to remove Christianity from our nation. Over the last 4 to 5 decades, they've worked to remove the substance by rewriting our history. We've seen it in school. We've seen it in the textbooks. Now they want to even remove the symbols of it by sandblasting buildings and bulldozing monuments. And there's a reason for it. Let me take you back to the Old Testament, Joshua. Then Joshua called, chapter 4, then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan. This was a major accomplishment for them. They were going into the new land. And each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder. It's a big one. According to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. That would be 12. That this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial to the children of Israel forever. See, there's a reason for memorials, because when our memories fade, and it does. I remember as a little kid in the town I grew up in, we had a 4th of July parade every year, and that was a big deal. We would all go, and you would decorate your bicycle, and you could ride your bicycle in the parade, and you would see all these war veterans, the World War II veterans, and there were still a few World War I veterans. They moved slow, but they were proud of their service. And I don't know, I mean, nobody that served in World War I is still alive. And, you know, the memories fade. And as I've said, history is being rewritten. And we forget. And so those memorials are, what was that for? You know, one of the things I've done in our family, we take trips. We actually stop at some of these memorials, Civil War battlefields, and explain to my kids, hey, this is what happened. This is why. And we've got to prevent this from happening again. And this is how we do that. But these memorials, clearly a cross, but it reflects who we are as a nation and what we fought for. And now they want to come back and they want to take these down. They've taken the substance out of the minds of our children by rewriting our textbooks and banning God and Christianity from our schools. And now the very symbolic representation of Christianity that's in public sight now has to be taken down. Do you think it's worth fighting for? All right, let's go to Eric in Missouri. Eric, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony.
So you think these are worth fighting for? What do you think?
Yes, sir. You know, one of the things I think is the organizations that are fighting to take these down know that, you know, typically Christians, you know, aren't real organized in political venues or the courtroom. And they know that the government's not going to fight to keep them, that they don't want to put up the money. So We, you know, as Christians need to set up an organization specifically to fight, you know, these organizations that are fighting to destroy us.
Well, and that's what we have here in this case with First Liberty Institute. That's mostly who these law firms that are fighting for these in the courts are doing so. These are Christian organizations. But
sure.
There is a role for government. I will say, you know, just as we were talking earlier about the Trump administration, you know, not wanting to be bullied by the courts to force this or take this young girl to get an abortion. I do think we have an administration now that is more sensitive to our history and to this effort to purge society of any representation of Christianity. Eric, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to Oklahoma where Dee Dee is on the line. Dee Dee, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, sir, I'm a conservative millennial, and my husband and I have a conservative home and a Christian home. We have three kids. We're a blended family. And just from this particular millennial's perspective, this is certainly something worth fighting for. My husband is a veteran. He never got to see action. He wished that he had. And I take it personally because my husband was so eager to die for this country and save it in God's name and Jesus' name, that it's an atrocity to me that people actually want to tear those memories down.
Well, Dee Dee, I think you're absolutely right. And please pass on our appreciation to your husband for his service to our country.
Thank you.
You know, the cross, you know, remember Jesus said greater love in John, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. And he was talking about himself. And how did he lay down his life? He laid down his life on the cross The cross is a symbol of sacrifice. The cross is a symbol of hope. The cross, everything converges at the cross. It is what is, it is the, it represents the evil of sin and why we have to have men and women be willing to lay down their lives, because there is evil in the world. But it represents what's good about the world, that there are those in the world who are willing to lay down their lives, not for themselves, but for others. And in the cross, it represents the hope that this is not the end, that there is more to come. There is eternity awaiting us. And that eternity can be with our Creator if we accept the one who died on the cross and receive the forgiveness for our sins that actually led him to the cross. You see, the cross is essential. And this is an effort. Don't think this is insignificant or this is just one of those political squabbles that the, you know, the atheists with too much time on their hands want to get involved in. This is, look, they've taken, I go back, they've taken the substance of Christianity out of the public square, out of our schools. And now they don't even want to have to look upon the cross and be reminded. And maybe there's a little kid there somewhere that might be prompted to ask the question, what's the cross about? Which is exactly why it must be protected. Let's go to Michael in Nashville. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So your thoughts, we need to fight for these things?
Absolutely. It comes to the point of, where does it stop? Because soon, people, you know, what about the crosses on the highway? Are we going to have to remove all of those and, you know, destroy someone's family that put them there because they lost a loved one? Does the Red Cross have to change its name because it has a cross in it? It won't stop. Soon, there can even be a point to where you can't even have any churches, because just by looking at it, you're assuming that we're pushing Christianity on someone.
Well, Michael, you're not far off, because there was a case in, I believe, if it was Afghanistan, it was Iraq, where one of the tents where chapel services were held for our military personnel, they had a cross on it. They were forced to take down the cross. So you're absolutely right. You give them an inch, they take a mile, and we cannot ever think that we can accommodate this. You can't. You just cannot, because their desire to eradicate any representation of Christianity is insatiable. They cannot be satisfied. They cannot be accommodated. Let's go to California, where Brenna is on the line. Brenna, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. I've been listening. I really appreciate your program very much. I think it's so important that we fight for this. It's an attempt to eradicate not only the crosses, but our history, just anything that has to do with what God has so graciously given this nation. No, not that we're without sin, but just we are one of the most blessed nations ever on the face of the earth. And I heard recently,
and it's because of sacrifice.
That's right. That's right. It is. And people like that woman that just called in, and her husband, you know, so much wanting to sacrifice for the country.
And where do those people come from? I mean, Western civilization knows that because of its Christian origins, and we have had men throughout the history of this country being willing to make those sacrifices because of that Christian ethic, that Western worldview that emanates from Christianity.
That's right. And what I find, I live in a place where it's very diverse. I live in San Jose, and there are many, many different culture groups here. The people that are coming from other nations where they've been badly persecuted, they're more, they see it more clearly about our Constitution and you know, what really is right and wrong than a lot of the kind of Caucasians that have been brainwashed, especially in this area. It's very, very liberal.
Well, it's primarily because of the product of our schools, our media, and those folks that coming over here, they know what it's like to be deprived of that freedom. I think you're absolutely right. I've heard those stories, had those conversations myself many times. Brendan, thank you so much for the call and for listening to Washington Watch out there in California. All right, let's going to work another call here. Let's go to Jason in Missouri. Jason, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm great. I don't think we should fight anything in the sense that, well, I mean, hear me out. I'm a follower of the teachings of Jesus Christ firmly. I just think that as Christians, Jesus said we were to be known, we would be known by our love for one another, not by crosses or images or buildings or anything really physical. It would be how we loved one another and each other. And I agree with you that, you know, people, we should have believers in Washington. We should have believers everywhere, but it shouldn't be in the sense of fighting anything. Now, you know, I could be wrong. I find even God himself in some of the first rules he gave man was, you know, don't worship any graven images, you know, worship me through, you know, your faith and your acts. I'm, of course, you're speaking to also somebody that's very passive, so I don't.
Well, you know. Jason, you'd have to get rid of a large portion of the New Testament, especially all the writings of Paul, who uses extensively terminology where he talks about warfare. Now, we're not talking about physical warfare. We're not about talking about fighting from a standpoint of taking up arms. We're talking about fighting, spiritual fighting, standing.
Right. But Paul mentioned nothing about fighting a government.
Well, no. I mean, he stood his ground. Even Jesus stood in the face of government. And, I mean, you look at Paul. I mean, he called government as it, I mean, that's the whole reason he went to Rome, is he wanted to be able to testify to the truth. Every ruler he stood in front of, he did not back away from that truth. Now, we have the unique privilege of living in a country in which we are the government. We're a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And so we have the ability to set the rules. And so if we're going to be passive, then guess who's going to set the rules? It's not going to be us. We have a right to engage in that process. And I believe we have a right to teach our children. Just as the Old Testament is very clear about these memorials so that our children would not forget when generations are removed and, you know, time goes on, people forget. And this is a reminder of the great sacrifice, World War I, World War II, the great sacrifices that were made by American men who laid down their lives for people they didn't even know. And that emanates from that understanding of our Christian faith. And it's reflective of who we are. And those things must be preserved. And we have every right to stand and preserve those. And if it means fighting in the courts, then we need to fight in the courts. If it means standing for that truth in the face of growing opposition, then we need to stand. Jason, thanks for listening, and I appreciate you calling in. Folks, out of time for today. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. Yes, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.